Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Full Service Radio.
And welcome to the Sun Cinema Podcast, a weekly radio show that examines the highs and lows of the medium of film through the filtered lens of Washington, D.C.'s only privately owned art house cinema. I'm your host, Jason Cauley, and I'm joined by my co-host and a proprietor of Sun Cinema, Ryan Hunter Mitchell. Ryan?
Hey, Jason.
There you go, got
hot mic.
Yeah, hot mic. David's not here.
We're missing David today.
Let's take a more...
Missed you
actually,
last week,
by the
way.
This music's perfect. We're in week 28 of the shutdown. The streets aren't plowed. People are scared. The Wi-Fi is down everywhere. We've burned almost all of the Secret Service limos to use for heat. Everyone's on strike. People are just not putting up with it. People are fed up.
Helicopters are falling from the air.
I used the remainder of my data, squandered it this morning, to go on Twitter to see the Oscar nominations. It seems that the hosts will be Stephen Miller and Sarah Sanders. Mark Wahlberg is up for Best Leading Actor in five slots, all five, for Shooter, Transformers, Invincible, Patriot's Day, and another Transformers movie. We got Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back up for Best Sound Design.
Love it.
The Best Picture, they're all Clint Eastwood movies. We're changing it up this year. We've got The Mule, American Sniper, Bloodline, Million Dollar Baby. And Best Actress, it's a tight one. It's between Cameron Diaz, Drew Barrymore, and Lucy Liu.
Love it. And all for Charlie's Angels.
Welcome to 2019.
I heard Bannon's up for Best Doc and the front runner.
Yeah. And there is a future movie made about the kid who screamed at the Native American on the mall this weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's up for an Oscar, too. And we don't even know who's directed it yet.
Brilliant.
Welcome, everyone. Hi, we're Sun Cinema. Everything's on fire here. DC is a fire fest, and we just got the Oscar noms.
Nice.
And we're gonna talk about the Oscars today because it's only been weeks since we shot all over the Golden Globes.
Yeah, so we may as well continue the shitting.
It's award season. Everything's great. It's cold. It's award season. Let's what are the hot takes, Jason?
We can kind of walk through the nominations if you want. They're
might as well.
They're
we're thrilled
all over the place. We're utterly and completely thrilled with all of the nominees.
All right, maybe the good news first.
Go ahead.
The leading nomination count goes to either Roma or The Favorite. They both have 10.
Right.
I thought both those movies were great.
Yeah, yeah, no, and I feel like that's actually, you know, about where that should be, given kind of the strength of those movies and a couple of directors who, you know, obviously know what they're doing.
Yeah, so that would lead you to believe that maybe we've got a good set of Oscar nominations.
But you would think, but it kind of falls apart.
Yeah.
So up for Best Picture, you have Black Klansman, Black Panther, Bohemian Rhapsody,
God,
The Favorite,
I know,
Green Book, Roma, A Star Is Born, and Vice. Eight nominees this year for Best Picture. They can't ever decide if they're doing 10,
yeah,
5, or 8, or 6.
Is it arbitrary at this point?
It kind of is,
I think. You know, I'm kind of all right with that's the one. It's like, it's the one surprise you might get is that you don't know how many they're going to nominate. It's like, okay, at least that's kind of fun.
So, best directors, Alfonso Cuarón's Roma, Yorgos Lanthimos for The Favorite, which was a little bit of a surprise, obviously, for me.
Yeah.
I thought he might get passed over in We'll talk about the snubs coming up. But Spike Lee, Spike Lee's first ever Oscar nomination.
Wow.
How crazy is that?
First ever?
First ever.
In any capacity?
Not for Do the Right Thing, not for Malcolm X, nothing.
I'm suddenly all for this now.
Yeah, and what about when the levees broke? He wasn't for best?
No.
Oh, my God.
Adam McKay for Vice, which I think people are
That's the Mike Pence movie, right?
Yeah.
It seems boring.
And Powellowski, I'm probably butchering that name, for Cold War.
Which everybody
loves.
So I know we've talked about this before. For Best Picture, they had considered a while back doing like a Best Blockbuster or High Budget Picture thing. And I was against it, just like most people were like, this is cheesy. And I guess their kind of mediation they did was, let's just put Black Panther up for Best Picture. It's not going to win, but you know, that
it's
way
Marvel. It made $1 billion. We're going to give it a nomination.
Yeah. But you know what? I'm changing my mind. Let them do the big budget thing, because Bohemian, this Fathom Event movies look like.
Yeah.
Come on. I mean,
yeah. So there you have it. We'll rattle through. Best Actress. This was kind of a surprise. Yalitza Aparicio for Roma.
That's pretty awesome.
Deservedly so.
Yeah, she was good.
Great. Glenn Close for The Wife, which no one has seen.
But no one said that she doesn't deserve it.
No. Everybody thinks she does because it's Glenn Close. Olivia Colman for The Favorite.
Whoop.
Amazing. Lady Gaga for A Star Is Born. And Melissa McCarthy for Can You Ever Forgive Me, which no one has seen. Lady Gaga will forever be known as Oscar nominated actress.
Oscar award winning actress Lady Gaga. pretty soon.
It's Lady Gaga. They do it with that name, yeah?
Well,
because they do Lady Gaga.
That's what she's
Gaga
billed as,
when she was like a younger, you know, fruitier name. Now it's Gaga. It sounds a little more prestigious, worth consideration.
So, Best Actress, Christian Bale for Vice, Bradley Cooper, Star Is Born, Willem Dafoe for An Eternity's Gate, another thing
for
no
Aquaman.
One's seen, Rami Malek, Bohemian Rhapsody, and Viggo Mortensen for Green Book. Kind of contentious there, but I mean, no big surprises, I guess.
I would have put the duck from The Favorite above almost all of them.
Yeah. So anyway, that's that.
Oh, Paddington 2 seems really slept on and overlooked.
Oh, it did get slept on, actually.
Yeah,
that has been one thing people have been a little upset. I hear it's great.
It's good. I saw it.
Yeah, I got to.
It's totally fine.
Yeah.
I've
heard from more than two people that it's very good. We're seeing.
So supporting actresses, Amy Adams for Vice, Marina de Tavira. For Roma. Fantastic. Regina King, Beale Street Could Talk, Golden Globe winner there. Emma Stone for The Favorite, and Rachel Weisz for The Favorite. Both electric.
Yeah.
We'll see how that's actually a pretty contentious category. There's some good people in that.
Yeah, that's probably the best like quality of
nominations, yeah.
Definitely.
All of the Crazy Rich Asians were snubbed?
All of them.
Each of them.
Snubbed, yeah.
Well, ensemble cast. They come up later in ensemble cast.
Right. They'll be in, like, presenter mode, I'm sure. For supporting actor, Mahershala Ali for Green Book. Should be True Detective, if anybody's watching that.
I've been waiting for a few to stack up, but I hear it's good.
Pretty great. Adam Driver for Black Klansman, Sam Elliott for A Star Is Born, his first nomination. Richard E. Grant, Can You Ever Forgive Me? And Sam Rockwell for Vice, playing George W. Bush. So, take what you will of that.
Yeah, we're in a loop. I really was hoping the Oscars, I don't know why, I thought they'd be better than the Globes, because the Globe nominations were pretty weak. We're living up to it.
Yeah.
Set a high bar, and we're living up to it.
Yeah, so, I mean, we can.
So most podcast publications, if they haven't seen something, that means that it's, you know, doesn't need to be ripped on. But let's take shots at these. I know we haven't seen most of them, but let's assume.
Yeah, I feel like we've seen quite a few of these, actually. There's some stuff out there we haven't seen, but this is, It's pretty rough. So anyway, the...
Well, yeah, so Variety put out its 15 biggest snubs yeah. and surprises. We should go over that and maybe add a few of our own.
Yeah, so snub number one, Bradley Cooper for director for A Star Is Born. Everybody kind of thought that was a lock, that he was going to get that nomination, but didn't happen.
Yeah, what? I haven't seen Star Is Born, but I'm going to defend it. It does seem like it's getting... maybe the hype was too big and there's like a response to that?
No, I think that's exactly what it is. I think it came out and everybody, it was kind of the first one out of the gate for the kind of Oscar runs. And everybody's like, oh, this is it. You know, it's across the board. It's a musical. They did A Star Is Born to like some great fanfare. It's never really been received great. I mean, it's the fourth iteration of this movie. And everybody was like, oh, they got it right. And Bradley Cooper's first directorial effort, he's going to be the next Clint Eastwood, Mel Gibson sure. kind of guy. He's going to be a great director. Sean Penn, all those guys.
With a little bit of luck, he can avoid some of the other sides of their characters.
Right.
No, but he is like, he's a big leading man in Hollywood. He's been carrying movies Super. For the last 10 years.
Yeah,
now.
He's one of the few guys that can like truly get a movie greenlit. If he wants to make it, it gets done. It was kind of a big surprise that he didn't get it. They said another snub, First Man gets shut out in all the main categories. Damien Chazelle's, supposed to be decent. Neil Armstrong kind of bio, NASA pick movie. No Claire Foy for Best Actress, no Ryan Gosling for Best Actor, no Best Score for Justin Hurwitz.
Which I feel like he's a shoe-in, always.
Yeah, he's always kind of a shoe-in, didn't get it. Also snub Timothy Chalamet, Beautiful Boy. So, take what you will.
I'm sure he's wonderful in it.
He's really super talented kid.
He'll have a chance.
He's got some more years in him. Here's a snub I don't really agree with. It's called John David Washington's performance of Black Klansman a snub. I guess he was nominated for Golden Globe, but it's he's totally affable. I mean, like,
oh,
you like him, you want to root for the guy, all that kind of thing, but it's not really a killer performance.
Yeah, he's one of the better parts of the movie.
Yeah, for sure. Love him. He's great, but not really surprising that he didn't get an Oscar nomination, even though his father is Denzel.
That should count for a lot.
Yeah. The snub everybody's kind of talking about in the acting category, which I kind of...
Begrudgingly
agree with, because I'm not a huge fan of this guy, but a lot of people thought Ethan Hawke was going to get nominated for First Reformed. And just didn't happen. Schrader got nominated for a screenplay.
For screenplay, but not for director.
Not for director, and it didn't get nominated for actor.
I kind of was glad. I was seeing people.
We saw this together.
Yeah. Looking back on the movie, I think it held up as a strong movie.
Yeah.
Specifically his acting.
Yeah. I think primarily because of Ethan Hawke. I mean, it was a great script, but Ethan Hawke carries that movie all the way through.
And
he's in like every scene.
And he works with the movie really well for being subtle through the whole thing before you realize like how intense of a character he is. And actually, people are pretty upset that the movie wasn't up for Best Picture, especially because you could just throw on a ninth. You're not gonna give it the award.
Right.
But I think it should have made that list for Best Picture. If the list is what it is, why not throw on First Reformed?
Another big snub, and we kind of agree with this one as well, for Best Actress, Toni Collette. And Hereditary.
Definitely.
I mean, it's rare that you get a horror film where an actor's performance is what's partly lauded in the whole thing. Uh-huh. And she was completely, engrossing. We just watched a clip sitting out there waiting, and it was completely engrossing again. You can't get over how great she is.
She yells at her son for having a face on his face.
Yeah. Sit there with that face on your face. So no Toni Collette, which does seem odd. And, another big snub was Won't You Be My Neighbor, the Mr. Rogers documentary did not get nominated. Everybody kind of thought that was an obvious choice, which I kind of did too.
Variety is saying a snub is Emily Blunt for Mary Poppins Returns and A Quiet Place.
I totally affable. She's a beautiful actress.
She's a good actress.
She's very good. You know, she's very solid, but, you know.
If there's one thing they got right this year, it's not having The Quiet Place up for stuff. For me.
Right, right.
For me. I agree. But she was very strong in that movie.
Yeah.
But, you know, I can sob another time. Michael B. Jordan for Black Panther?
No, come on. I mean, I didn't even read that because I don't think that's a snub. That's just an obvious, you know, if you're not going to give it to, you know, Denzel's son.
Yeah.
Michael B. Jordan, come on.
His character was so good in that. But yeah, I mean, this is trying to pay some respect to the big ass movies that are carrying Hollywood right now.
Yeah.
Because good movies are not being given a big platform.
Yeah. And honestly, I mean, like, outside of kind of the awards arena, these things don't really get talked about. A lot of these movies would just get passed by, you know, in the mainstream world of cinema goers.
Yeah, that's that. I guess that's what kind of bothers me. Like, I know the Oscars are often kind of like, it's hack films. It's a lot of the big budget movies that follow a certain, you know, check all the boxes to get right in the categories. However, it's also the one time a year that you're giving a spotlight on some pretty well-made stuff that wasn't big budget.
Right.
And it is a bummer to see just a pretty big dismissal of independent stuff, it seems to me.
Oh, I agree.
Aside from Roma, which is a cool game changer, and the fact that it's like a Netflix streaming movie.
Yeah, Netflix finally, you know, not finally, I guess. I mean, but this is their first, you know, nominated Best Picture.
Devil's Advocate, why should we care about how a movie is distributed? I'm just saying, like, because I do think it's really cool, but Devil's Advocate point of view, like, yeah, why should we care how a movie came out?
I would.
You know what I mean?
It's changing. I mean, it's just the platforms are changing. How we watch movies are changing. I think, and I just gave Ryan this book, The Big Picture, with a guy named Ben Fritz that wrote it, does a great job of kind of laying out how the studios have just completely changed. And, I mean, they're a handful, not even a handful, there's maybe three or four directors on the planet, Steven Spielberg, James Cameron, Quentin Tarantino, that can just kind of do what they want and get something made. That's it. You know, Martin Scorsese can't just make whatever he wants.
Anymore.
He's got to go somewhere to get this stuff done. Actors don't have, you know, the pull that they had. The Will Smiths, the Adam Sandlers, all these guys that were, you know, massive stars. I mean, Tom Hanks even, and these, like, they can't just put their stamp on it and get something made. Maybe Bradley Cooper can get whatever he wants made. That's about it.
Yeah.
You know, there's just not a lot of stuff. So the way things are changing is because the studios have completely altered the way they approach filmmaking, and they don't want anything to do with kind of mid-budget films anymore. They don't want that $30 to $50 million movie. They want franchises. They want stuff that they're kind of prepackaged, ready to go, that they know they're going to get, you know, more than their return on investment. And that's partly due to kind of the globalization of cinema as well, and how industries like China have become, you know, more important. It's hard to say that, but more important than domestic box office.
Yeah, bigger.
They're going to get a bigger draw, and you're not going to get a small film, you know, with, you know, some serious actors and a serious writer and a serious director, something like, you know, First Reformed or something like that. It's going to have a hard time getting made these days. There's a couple of studios, Annapurna and A24,
yeah,
that are still making those films. Outside of that, there's not really anybody doing that. They're all looking at what's my next big franchise opportunity. There's not even space for a lot of these films to get made outside of, or inside the normal studio process. Thankfully, you have stuff like Amazon, you have stuff like Netflix that are willing to either financially support these movies getting made or buy them, you know, once they're kind of on the on the circuit at Sundance or
Well, yeah, and Toronto, Sundance is going on right now, right?
Sundance is happening right now,
absolutely. So, yeah, I know some people who are going out buyers for some of the studios now, and you know, I specifically asked them, so a Netflix original, a Prime original, from Amazon. At what point is this distributor, the online distributor, actually coming in on production? And I guess when it is original, it's usually something bought and money was put in a little bit before it's actually a finished product.
Right.
But barely. You know, it might just be just the promotion of the
that
movie.
That, I think, is even expanding, though. I mean, Netflix is putting out kind of all calls on screenplays. They want to buy.
Yeah, well, now they're producing
content.
Stuff. Yeah.
You know, they want to basically, you know, they've become their own studio. And from ground up, from the original story completely forward, fully packaged, they want to produce films, which is great for all of these movies that typically, you know, don't have a home inside the studio system anymore.
Well,
or the traditional studio systems, the MGMs and the Paramounts and Sonys and all that.
Well, and not just looking at the past about, we're talking about these mid-budget films or independent films, but also thinking about the future, the way that these things are distributed really changes the content itself, too. I mean, if you look at something like Ballad of Buster Scruggs, which mm-hmm. got a few nods, but that's something I think that was made. If they weren't doing that with Netflix, I think it would have been almost an entirely different movie, or never have done it.
Yeah, they just would have. They would have put it in the pile of their, you know,
ideas.
40 other things that just, you know, great ideas that never got done.
Yeah. So then we're looking at, like, with this format, bingeability, things that maybe are watched in a totally different format that aren't a full experience the way that Black Panther might be, which is you're going to a movie to have a big, loud experience on a big screen, and it just serves an entirely different purpose. And to fill in those theaters, to keep them running, to all the stuff that goes into that, you kind of need these big budget movies, especially since people aren't coming to movies as much anymore.
Right.
So looking at it,
yeah,
being,
when you have a 75-inch screen and surround sound at home, and you know you can,
yeah,
it's really is like, you know, the old idea of, you know, having to be in a theater to get that kind of experience, technically, from a technical standpoint, doesn't really exist anymore.
No, there's not a monopoly on this now.
Yeah.
So I think when you're thinking about how what format it's coming out, how it's distributed, that changes a lot. I think it's one of the bigger things we can look at in movies right now. And that's something we can kind of hold to the Oscars and see how it's being entertained by the Hollywood structure. The fact that they are giving nods to these, I bet they weren't thrilled. I bet it's only in the last couple of years that they're not resentful of Netflix.
Right.
So I do think this is all interesting. Not that we can completely grasp what the picture is, but it's definitely showing a change in how we absorb media, how we're watching it, how things are getting made, what stuff's getting made, at what budget level. You know, you can make pretty specific, fine-tuned stories and find an audience for them now. Whereas if you had to distribute into the theater, there probably isn't that audience because it's so... In small towns, maybe there's four people who want to see Roma.
Yeah, I grew up in one of those small towns.
You were one of those four, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was a struggle, you know, as a high schooler having to drive, you know, 45 minutes into St. Louis and then, you know, to some little small theater even there because they mm-hmm. weren't playing at the larger theaters to see something like a Mike Lee film or something like that. You know,
yeah, we had a twin theater, a tiny little theater to see these things in the next town over.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Netflix is able to find those four people in each small town of all of the small towns and get it to them.
Right.
So,
and you're getting an opportunity, I think, with the Amazons and the Netflix, at least right now. We'll see how long this kind of continues and what other players come into the conversation. But right now, you're able to do something, you know, Curran's able to make Roma the way he wants to make Roma. You know, you've got that kind of, you know, that moment from 70s Hollywood where directors really ruled, and these streaming platforms are kind of giving that back to these directors and filmmakers across the board to be able to make the movie they want. So mm-hmm. the idea is ultimately, you know, do you end up potentially with better stuff? You know, let the studios have the big franchise type films and we go see a spectacle movie every once in a while. And then, you know, the Netflix, the Amazons, the Hulus potentially down the road and other opportunities start presenting themselves with, you know, are giving us, you know, opportunities to see smaller films that, you know, are impactful, artistic, whatever you want to, you know, label you want to put on it.
Yeah, Jack.
Would Roma sweeping really help in that effort, you think? You know, if Roma comes out with all these awards, do we maybe see more of that?
Yeah, I think it does. I think even the nominations.
Just the nominations,
yeah. Yeah.
What an answer you gave. That's
no, no, I think it does. I think it gives validation to what they're doing, to their model.
Right,
definitely.
Right.
But it doesn't mean that the quality is going to be good. It could just mean that we're going to get 16 more bird boxes.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't mean that we're everything's going to be Roma.
That's what I worry about.
Listen,
yeah.
For all of that stuff, yeah.
They'll still fuck it up. Yeah.
They're going to do that. But, I mean, if you look at the actors that used to... I mean, Clooney's kind of taken himself out of the running and lives in Italy with his wife now or what, you know, on whatever island they live in or on. But look at the like movie stars. Brad Pitt, Will Smith, all these guys like who used to get movies made are now on Netflix, and they're making bad movies by and large.
Sure. Brad Pitt's producing great movies.
Brad Pitt's producing great movies, but
yeah, he's doing Netflix movies that aren't very good.
Yeah.
Like, when he's acting in them.
Right. But I mean,
you see like the Coen brothers straight to streaming stuff. I mean, maybe the pressure of the big machine helps some of these artistic directors kind of come to bat with something big. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. But exactly, but then you're seeing different different formats and different things getting made. Like,
for better or worse, yeah.
Yeah, for both. I think there's definite potential for this to be good. I don't trust that the models aren't just going to make bland, boring shit.
Right, because then eventually it'll just become streaming algorithmic, you know.
Yeah, you know, well, this, to get way in the weeds here, that's kind of, people talk about the internet being really democratizing. You know, there's more... People can just make good Instagram stories and are getting more views than any of these movies are ever going to get. Like, there's Instagrammers right now who are kicking Roma's ass on viewership and probably getting more money because they, you know. So let's not go too far down there. But, you know, there is this democratizing effect of the internet, and it's easier to distribute stuff. It's easier to make stuff. There's a lot of creators making stuff that could water everything down. And, you know, you think the good stuff's going to float to the top, but maybe it won't. You know, maybe it's just going to be...
The 2029 Social Media Awards.
Right.
Hosted by the Academy.
It can't be worse than the Oscars. It cannot be... Maybe it could.
No.
Get Jake Paul to host the Oscars.
Best tweet. A new Twitter account.
I mean,
that's probably where we're headed, no?
Yeah.
If we insist on award shows, then why not?
Stars.
Yeah. Can we just let the Razzies take it? I bet the Razzies are good this year.
Oh, yeah,
we haven't covered them.
The Razzies are probably great.
I bet those are great. Let's maybe go into a little more about Netflix. That's a good pivot. So Netflix, you know, hyped us up with a... Can we play this clip of what was hyped up for a few weeks about a very good Netflix production?
All these models, like, in the Bahamas...
The most insane festival the world has ever seen.
Island getaway turned disaster.
It became very barbaric.
Right now, you are the fucking laughingstock of everything.
Just wait until you see what you're getting yourselves into.
Yeah, just wait till you see Fyre, the Netflix documentary about the Fyre Fest. So I didn't see it. We're gonna do a more in-depth review of this next week, but. It was hyped up. Everyone was waiting for this to come out. If you guys remember all the Instagrammers flying out to the Bahamas to get sand crabs or whatever and fed cold sandwiches. It seemed like an accidental scam that was pretty funny. But the best part of this is that Hulu just dropped, 2 days before the Netflix one? Hulu dropped their own Fyre Fest documentary.
So now they're dueling Fyre Festival documentaries, which, you know, I mean, it's like a documentary about the most disastrous, you know, festival. What is a music festival, I guess, right? Scheduled to take place in the Bahaman islands.
And, I actually can't wait to watch these.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's going to be great. It just looks like a catastrophe waiting to happen.
Yeah, it sounds so funny. And luckily, it turned into the latest version of the Prestige versus Illusionist, Deep Impact versus Armageddon rivalry. Seeing the same movie.
Ants in a Bug Life.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll do kind of in-depth on that next week. We'll watch this. We should try to live in the same conditions and play a drinking game to the Fyre Fest documentaries.
I heard at a bar.
Yeah.
Local
yeah.
man at bar. he posited that the entire Firefest was a hoax.
Banksy.
For the sake of the documentary.
Oh, nice.
I like that
oh,
one.
Oh, damn. Yeah. Well, it's like they say about the Peloponnesian War, right?
Right.
Yeah, right. Like, it's this awful war that can ends Athens. I forget. No, it ends whatever. Who cares? The reason it was it happened was so we could have the book written about it.
There you go.
Which Thucydides? Who? Anyone? You were you're a combat vet. Come on, this is the art of war, right? It's the Peloponnesian War. Anyways. The reason Firefest happened was so we could see these documentaries and eventually
right.
pass an estate tax.
And then all the money they make on, because the producers were Fuck Jerry, right? It was the promoters of the festival that produced the Netflix doc.
Really?
Yes.
Ah, this is
that's where the conspiracy comes from, where it's like, yeah, this was a long play.
Oh, that's so cool.
And the return on investment will be there eventually.
They're not morons. They're geniuses. So a bigger hit for Netflix, though, and what they should be actually more concerned about is a new-to-me streaming service that you can get with your library card.
Oh, yeah. Check this out. I mean, seriously, I came across this actually in Entertainment Weekly because my wife still gets every magazine on the planet. And it was talking about this new streaming service called Canopy with a K, K-A-N-O-P-Y. We should probably link to it or something like that, but it's fantastic. You basically just have to have a library card, which I don't know how many people do nowadays. I actually have one.
Is this your only form of ID?
Ralph's card. But yeah, if you have a library card or want to get one, they're pretty easy to get. You can sign up for Canopy. You punch in your library card number, and it automatically gives you 6 free movies a month to watch on Canopy. And it's fully streaming service. It's got an app on Apple, TV. You can go download the app. Beautiful looking. It's basically taken the place of Filmstruck when it comes to Criterion. So you go on this website. All the Criterion stuff from Breathless, 8.5, any of the Bergman films, Truffaut, mm-hmm. name it, is on there. A lot of great classic American films as well.
Oh, they break them up well.
The website's actually really well done, and it's pretty straightforward. I mean, the categories, you go into movies and it breaks down, independent cinema, world cinema, classic cinema. And even when you go into those categories, the subcategories drop into, American neorealism.
Mark Wahlberg.
Anything and everything you can think of just, in a really good setup. This is a completely free service that you can sign up for, download, and take advantage of if you're a cinephile of any kind. Or just have, those odd films that you can't find anywhere to rent or stream.
Or if you're still mourning the loss of Filmstruck from a few months ago.
Yeah, for all the Filmstruck, people who, and I was one of them.
Struckheads, come to Canopy.
Yeah, I had Filmstruck and, it was kind of sad to see it go. It's all on Canopy now. All the Criterion stuff you're missing is on Canopy. Yeah. So check it out. Canopy with a K.
See, I want to see Canopy start producing local stuff from all the libraries.
There you go.
Listen, stranger things could happen, man. Like Canopy could, it's a new platform. It could start producing its own content. It's huge on the documentary side as well. If you're a fan and just love documentaries, completely loaded with every documentary I can think of that I've, has either been, nominated for Oscars or just kind of has that mystique as like, this great documentary from the 70s, whatever. It's here, I promise you. Well, you won't be disappointed.
I'm going to give a shout out to a pretty defunct good streaming site that I used to use before Netflix did online streaming. There was a topdocumentaryfilms.com, and it was a list of, and it categorized it well. It was like you could do alphabetical or you could do by topic.
Nice.
It would get some of the terrible in the weeds YouTube documentaries, but it had a good streaming link for almost any documentary on any topic. Boring stuff. I mean, stuff that now is probably all just loaded up on Netflix under History Channel docs and stuff. Mm-hmm. But it used to be a good site for watching those.
just as a rundown for this on Canopy, so it's got the breakdowns of genres under documentary are ethnicity and identity with stuff like I'm Not Your Negro, first up, politics and current affairs, media and popular culture, women in society, LGBTQ stories, arts and artists, science, nature, technology, health and wellness, historical perspectives. I mean, there's 5,277 videos and documentaries on Canopy website.
The Sophie Fien Zizek doc there. All right.
Yeah, Pervert's Guide to Ideology. Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, like, it's really, I can't say enough. I just found this website this weekend and wanted to make sure we talked about it, you know, when we came in here today, because it really is something everybody should download for free and, you know, watch six classic movies a month, you know.
And get your library card.
And you get a library card.
It's still January 2019. You can still make a resolution to watch six free movies a month.
Yeah.
Via Canopy.
No, definitely take advantage of it.
Hey, also, do we want to, before the show's over at some point, should we blast through the Razzie nominations?
Oh, you got them?
They're out.
Let's do it.
Yeah?
I love it.
I guarantee this is better than the Oscars. I'm already putting everything I have on it.
Worst picture. And then I want your votes.
Yeah, let's go.
Quiet Place.
Gotti.
Oh, I heard it so bad.
The Happy Time Murderers. Holmes and Watson.
Oh, maybe the worst reviewed film of the year.
Holmes and Watson. It looked. I hope they were on a long game because it looks so not funny. And I love Will Ferrell.
It's got a Metacritic score of like 20.
Rounding it out, Robin Hood and Winchester.
Oh,
that was the one with the high tech bows and arrows. Yeah.
Oh yeah, the Jamie Foxx Robin Hood. Yeah. Mm. Which one was Winchester's the I know that movie. It's about the house in California that the lady just kept building on and on.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
It's a hard
film, actually saw that. It's almost unwatchable.
Oh, that's great. That's so good.
All right, so the favorite?
Probably Holmes and Watson. Man.
Yeah, Holmes and Watson looks so rough. Yeah. I mean, the Gotti movie is obviously really Gotti was all back with the MoviePass days. MoviePass like basically had a scam where they rigged the numbers to like, get good reviews, and they started all these bots to give good reviews. It got reviewed as much as like Ocean's 8 did that opening weekend, and obviously no one saw Gotti.
So worst actress.
Oh yeah.
Jennifer Garner in Peppermint. Probably. Amber Heard in London Fields. Melissa McCarthy, dual nomination in The Happy Time Murderers and The Life of the Party.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Helen Mirren in Winchester and Amanda Seyfried in The Clapper.
I will say, and I am a fan of Melissa McCarthy. I think she's terribly funny. You know, kind of came out with Bridesmaids and all that. If you look at her track record, she does some straight up garbage. I mean, she makes some bad, bad choices. So I'd probably go with Melissa McCarthy.
All right.
And she's up for an Oscar, so I like
it. She's like both Oscar-nominated and Razzie-nominated.
Is there like an EGOT with a Razzie, yeah, too?
Exactly.
Worst actor. Johnny Depp, voice only, in Sherlock Gnomes.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
Will Ferrell in Holmes and Watson.
Mm.
John Travolta in Gotti. Donald J. Trump as himself in Death of a Nation and Fahrenheit 11/9.
Oh, jeez.
And Bruce Willis in Death Wish.
Yeah.
Oh, damn. I forgot they made Death Wish again.
I would say it's got to be Willis or Travolta with Gotti or Death Wish. I'm going to go Travolta.
I'm
going Travolta.
Even Johnny Depp's on the list, I'm still going to go Travolta.
Yeah.
Worst supporting actor. Jamie Foxx in Robin Hood. Ludacris, voice only, in Show Dogs.
Nah,
Joel
sure
McHale
fine.
In The Happy Time Murderers. John C. Reilly in Holmes and Watson.
Oh,
I love him.
And Justice Smith in Jurassic World.
Jamie Foxx in Robin Hood. I mean, that just looks like one of the worst pieces of garbage I've ever seen.
What were they again? I'm going to go. Nah, I don't even care. I'm going to say Ludacris is the best one of those because I can't imagine he's actually a bad voice actor. He's so funny.
Yeah.
So Jamie Foxx is taking that one. Yeah. All right, we're supporting actress. Kellyanne Conway as herself in Fahrenheit 11/9. Marcia Gay Harden in 50 Shades Freed.
Oof.
Kelly Preston in Gotti.
Yeah.
Jazz Sinclair in Slender Man. Melania Trump as herself in Fahrenheit 11/9.
The Razzies are getting all political.
I'm sticking with real actors. No, I'm going Kelly Preston. Gotta be awful.
I'm upset about
it's true,
the political slant of the Razzies this year.
that's a little weak. Worst screen combo, right?
Yeah, worst screen combo. This one's really good. Any two actors or puppets, especially in those creepy sex scenes, the Happy Time Murderers.
Okay.
Johnny Depp and his fast-fading film career in Sherlock Gnomes. Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly trashing two of literature's most beloved characters in Holmes and Watson. Kelly Preston and John Travolta getting Battlefield Earth-type reviews in Gotti. And then Donnie Trump. I'm not even that one doesn't count.
Leave him alone. And
yeah, that's
it. It's Riley and Farrell. Yeah. It's our boys for sure. I hope they're trolling us.
Yeah. Well, there's three more awards here. We can.
Oh, I love this. No, this is great.
Yeah. Worst remake, ripoff,
this is
or
a good
sequel.
Category.
No, I like this. Death of a Nation was remake of Hillary's America. Right. Death Wish, Holmes and Watson, The Meg. They're calling a ripoff of Jaws.
Oh.
And Robin Hood.
I think Holmes and Watson is probably going to be the worst thing of the year. Yeah. I think it's going to sweep.
Worst director. Ethan Coen. Is that his name?
Yeah.
Holmes and Watson. Kevin Connolly with Gotti. James Foley, 50 Shades Freed. And then we got Brian Henson, Happy Time Murderers, and the Spierig Brothers for Winchester. Wow, it's really the same films for every category
sure,
here.
Yeah. I think it's Coen for Holmes and Watson.
It's the same five films for worst screenplay. They really just...
No, they could have brought in this up.
Yeah, there's a lot out there that could have been picked up on this year.
Can we give a Razzie to the Academy for a year after their whole Time's Up thing, nominating a single woman for Best Director or Best Picture?
Oh, man.
How about the Academy Award should win all the Razzies this year?
Yeah, there's hardly a woman nominated for screenplay even, I think.
And there was there was, especially if you got that pile of movies, you can make nine.
Right.
Why did they not just throw some more on there? You Were Never Really Here.
Right.
That was pretty good. I really love Madeline's Madeline. Of course, that was never going to be for an Oscar. Right. But that was Josephine Decker. We got, who had made, You Were Never Really Here. I forget the director of that, but that was the one with Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah,
that was good.
Yeah.
There was a good handful of movies that they should have thrown on there, at least widen the field.
I agree. Yeah, no, there's hardly any women nominated for anything other than the female categories.
And those were the only good categories.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So the Razzie goes to Netflix, the Academy, let's give it to Charlie's Angels since they didn't win the best actress thing that I gave
them.
Lynn Ramsey. She doesn't get she gets an official Sun Cinema Oscar nod from us.
Tom Burton with the Lifetime Achievement Award.
Tom Burton, Lifetime Achievement Award. Dante for making good drinks, and he's staring at us through the window. I'd like to thank my family. I have a daughter somewhere, and Drake's daughter.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts, covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.